WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is actress and rap music star Queen Latifah. Her first CD in 1989 established her image as an Afrocentric, independent woman who didn't like the misogynistic bent of some fellow rappers. The strength that she portrays in her music has carried over into her roles on TV and in the movies. She was one of the stars of the TV series Living Single and has co-starred in the movies Juice, Set It Off, and Living Out Loud. Queen Latifah has a new autobiography called Ladies First, in which she describes herself as a young black woman from the inner city who is making it despite the odds. She says she's lived in housing projects and in fine homes, hung out with drug dealers, and with presidents. Let's start with her record Unity, which in 1994 won a Grammy, an NAACP Image Award, and a Soul Train Music Award.
Every time I hear a brother call a girl a bitch or a hoe, trying to make a sister feel low, you know all of that got to go. Now everybody knows there's exceptions to this rule. I don't be getting mad when we playing, it's cool. But don't you be calling me out my name. I bring crap to those who disrespect me like a dame. That's why I'm talking. One day I was walking down a block, I had my cutoff shorts on, right? Cause it was crazy hot. I walked past these dudes when they passed me. One of them felt my booty, he was nasty. Yeah. I turned around red, somebody was catching the rat. Then the little one said,
yeah, me bitch.
And laughed. Since he was with his boys, he tried to break fly. I punched him dead in his eyes, said,
who you calling a bitch?
U-N-I-T-Y.
In this rap, you talk about what you don't like about bitch and hoe kind of language. Elaborate on that for me.
You know, honestly, the record was really made in response to, at the time, there were so many records coming out with, you know, rappers calling women, you know, bitch this, hoe that. And I just thought it was like getting out of control. It was becoming a bit too much. And I'm not saying that I don't, you know, use expletives when I'm hanging out with my friends, you know, and, you know, we may say some of those things, but we say it in joking. But when it's meant to be really derogatory or to disrespect people constantly, you know, it just got to be too much. And so I felt like saying something about it, you know.
Did you feel that that language represented larger attitudes toward women in the music world or the rap world or among your friends?
Well, I feel like they represent certain, well, definitely some people use that word to apply to all women, you know. And it seems like the word, I mean, I could call a guy an MF, but it's not going to be as harsh as him calling me a bitch. There's a difference. It sounds worse and it feels worse. You know what I mean? So I felt like, you know, it's time somebody says something about it, because it's still out of control. It's still out of control, you know, but I think that helped bring awareness to it. And the record wasn't so much about the word bitch. The record was about, the first verse is about that, you know, the respecting a woman. The second verse is about abuse, a woman being beaten by her man and finding the strength to leave. And the third verse was about young girls, like, who wanted to be tough, wanted to be gangster bees, you know what I mean? I mean, the record was really about a lot of different things, and the point of the record was unity. Let's bring it all together. Let's put all of that stupid stuff to the side, and let's be together, man. Let's stop pushing each other away from each other, and let's be down with each other.
As a woman who was a rapper, were you expected to go along with that? Were people surprised when you took issue with it in your rap?
No, I think people respected me for it. You know, they may have been surprised, but I think they respected me for it.
Now, Queen Latifah, you may have the only rap record, at least the only one I know of, that has the line, "I'm staying celibate" in it. And this is about somebody whose body wants to have sex, but their mind is saying no.
Yeah.
Why don't I play some of this? This is called No Yes.
Okay.
Play the unit. Fine tune in. Talking about sex in the night.
Come with the sex. I know you wanna see me undressed. You're feeling the taste, my sweetness. And since I'm your sex interest, it's about time for me to confess. I wanna smoke you like Buddha, bless. But my mind like a bulletproof vest. It's a no yes.
My body's ready, my mind's blocked. It's gonna take a lot to reach my hot spot. I kid you not, I wanna set it and let you wet it, so come and get it. And when we through, you need a paramedic. No, never mind, my thoughts dip. You might trip or flip, and so instead I'm staying celibate. My body's ready, my mind's bugging, and so I'm struggling. Do I need your love or your luck? I just don't.
But my body keep telling me,
Queen Latifah, tell me a little bit about the writing of this record.
This record was fun because this record was also taken from another real life experience where I was in Miami with someone that I went to high school with who wound up doing security. He's a cop now, so he wound up doing security for me, and he was always handsome in high school, and we would, you know, flirting with each other and, you know, talking. And you know, he's sitting in my room, and I'm, like, sitting on my bed, and I'm looking at him debating, like, yo, should I do it or don't do it? Do it or don't do it? You know, so that's kind of where the line in the song comes from during the chorus. But this is the debate that I think every person goes through when they physically, they would love to do it. But then mentally, you know, and their mind begins to analyze the whole situation, and it's like, nah, I don't know about that. Let me think about that. You know, you should be able to, they should both be in sync. If they're not in sync, then something's not right, probably, so.
What reaction did you get to this record?
I got a good reaction to it, because everybody could relate to it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Queen Latifah, rap star, actress, and now author of a new memoir called Ladies First. When you first started going to clubs to hear music, you said that the one that you used to go to a lot was called Latin Quarters in Manhattan. And you mm-hmm. were living in Newark, so you'd go across the river, go to this club mm-hmm. in Manhattan. And you said you'd take back to New Jersey with you some of the styles and the new lingo that you were picking up from the rap club in Manhattan. What were the things you took back with you?
The dances. That was, like, one of the most popular dances to ever come out in rap history was this dance called the WAP. And it started there. It started in that club. It started in New York City and was mastered there. And there was so many moves to it. And I was good at it. So I would go there and I would practice. I would go and watch and try and pick it up. And then I would go home and practice in the mirror until I nailed it, you know, and then I would show my friends, you know, my boys from across the street, my homegirls, you know, I would show all of them, and most of them couldn't do it. This one kid named Rich, he got it. He was young. He was like, you know, 13 at the time, you know, 12 or 13, and he got it real good. But I would take the dances back. Also, the clothing style. I mean, it was all about a name brand back then. You know, I had a Swatch sweatsuit with some Guess socks with some spot-built sneakers or K-Swiss sneakers with a Benetton backpack and a Benetton hat, you know? So it was like, it was about style. It was about, you know, flashing those name brands, you know? Even Coca-Cola was popular. Coca-Cola had T-shirts, you know, and sweatshirts that were like the bomb to wear back then.
What about language? What were the words that you were bringing back with you?
Oh, man, I cannot remember. Yo, I don't know. That's dope. Yeah, probably that's dope, fresh, you know, crazy, like crazy this, or, you know, it was mad hot outside, or it was crazy hot, it was stupid hot. I mean, you exaggerated everything, basically. They had stupid money, you know, to mean a lot of money, you know. Well, that car, ill car, fat car, dope car, stupid car, mad hot car, you know. It was the way you exaggerated it made it seem better than what it probably really was.
Now, the first name that you rapped under was Princess of the Posse. How did you decide on that name for yourself?
No, Latifah was my name. The Princess of the Posse was just my little title, you know, because I was like the only girl in our crew. And Ramsey was kind of like, Ramsey and DJ Mark, the 45 King, were like the heads of the crew, you know, so to speak. They were like the heads of the crew, but I didn't go with either one of them, so I couldn't be like their girlfriends or anything like that. So I was like the little sister. So I took the princess title.
So what was it like being the only female in your posse?
I wasn't the only female, but I was the only female rapper. It felt good. I was, you know, I was cool with it, you know. And then all my friends, I introduced like a lot of my friends to the guys in my crew, and some of them hooked up with the guys in my crew. So it was like, it was cool. We had a big old family. We had a female DJ, this girl named Ginger G. She used to DJ. So she was the female DJ. I was the female rapper. And, you know, we had a couple of other people, you know, down with us, but that was it. And it was actually a good experience for me because I got to be around guys and see how they think and what they do. And they could be natural around me. They didn't really hide anything, you know, in front of me because it wasn't like I was their girlfriend, you know. So they didn't have to front and, you know, be phony or whatever. I learned a lot. And then I had them right there to help me practice. We all practiced around each other. We would write and then we would bounce the rhymes off of each other to see what the other person thought and get constructive criticism. It was almost like a school for rap. It was real good.
My guest is rap music star and actress Queen Latifah. She has a new autobiography. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Queen Latifah. She is a rap star, an actress, and now the author of a new memoir called Ladies First. How did you decide what you wanted your image to be?
I kind of just wanted it to not be like anybody else that was already out. So, you know, when the record company gave me some money to go shopping to take, you know, to get clothes and stuff for my promo pictures, you know, I didn't have a stylist, so they basically just gave me money to go shopping. So I went and bought, you know, a couple of outfits, you know, some stretch pants and a nice shirt or whatever, you know. But then I was walking down the street downtown in Newark called Halsey Street, and I passed this African store, and I had already decided my name was Queen Latifah by this point. And then I was looking at some of the clothing, and I liked the way that the pants were made. It was like a drawstring thing. It was beautiful embroidery. I saw this fabric, and I asked the lady, could she make me a suit, basically, you know, a shirt and some pants and a hat to match, like a crown. And she said she could do it, and she hooked it up for me, and it came out real cool. So I took my first promo pictures in it, and I was barefoot in these pictures, squatting with this African suit on, and it was like, whoa, who is this? You know, my look was just automatically different from then on. Plus, I was more open-minded. I didn't have to just wear, you know, sweatsuit and a gold chain and, you know what I mean? Everybody was already wearing that. I didn't want to be like everybody else. I wanted to be an individual. So considering the fact that at that time there was a lot of pressure on South Africa to free Nelson Mandela and for companies to divest, I was really conscious at that time of what was going on in the black community and in the world, African, as an African American. So that would just fell right in line with it.
It's good you had your clothes made, too, because you read in your book that you hated the full-sized women's shops. You didn't like the clothes in there.
Well, yeah, most of the time it's just some big, you know. I mean, things have gotten a lot nicer.
Uh-huh.
Since, you know, then I was, you know, that was like 10, 12 years ago or whatever. But, Yeah, things have gotten, they've come a long way. You know, I still think that the bigger ladies need some really fly clothes to wear. Because most women, I mean, most women that I know are just small women, you know? They need to have really nice things made for them so they can look just as beautiful as, you know, these little size sixes. It's all good. Share the love.
You write that when you were growing up, you were uncomfortable with your body because you were big. Is that something you had to get over before you started performing, or had you already gotten over that?
Yeah, I basically had gotten over that by then. I mean, my initial concern wasn't because I was big, because I wasn't, like, big fat, you know. I was bigger than every other girl in the class.
You were playing basketball.
Yeah, I was, like, always the tallest girl in the class, always the biggest girl in the class. Until, like, this other girl came to school named Shania, and I was so happy because she was bigger than me. And I didn't think it was possible, but I was so happy because she took the pressure off of me for a minute, which was nice. But it was like my breasts, you know, I developed my family, the women in my family are pretty well endowed up top. So I got pretty well endowed pretty early in life. I was like 11 years old, popping up with these things, and I'm like, oh God, what do I do with this? What are you doing here? Why ye me? And then they just grew. So my friends would like tease me sometimes. They made me feel a little bit uncomfortable about it. But as I grew older, I grew to accept them. I grew to love my body, you know, and it was reinforced by certain people that I was involved with intimately. They loved it too. So I'm like, man, and now I love my breasts. This is the best thing in the world.
You know, you use your size on stage as power, too.
Yeah, why not? I am statuesque. My stature goes right along with my personality.
And tell me about your name, Queen Latifah. Not just Latifah, but Queen Latifah.
Well, initially, the Queen was put on because I didn't want to be MC Latifah. Goes back to not wanting to be like everyone else. You know, MC Latifah didn't sound right to me. It just sounded, and everybody was MC something back in the day. So I just didn't want to be MC Latifah. I was like, man, that sounds corny. And I could have just left it at, my first single just says Latifah. So I could have just been Latifah. But I felt like I needed a little prename, a little, you know, something to go before that. And so I was like writing down all of these possible, this list of possible things and bouncing them off of my friend Ramsey. And I was like, what about Queen? What about Queen Latifah? He was like, yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. My mother laughed at me, but, you know.
that's her job.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, your 17-year-old daughter calls herself Queen Latifah, you're going to likely crack up a little bit.
When you started rapping, gangster rap was very popular. Did you relate to the stories of gangs and guns?
Well, we had gangs and guns, but not to the extent of that they did here in California. You know, it wasn't quite the same. You know, California has a huge culture of gangs out here. And we had, like, gangs, but see, gangs played out in Jersey and New York. It was no longer cool to be in a gang. So if it wasn't cool, then you didn't want to do it. But I could relate to it, but I had no idea. And everybody wanted to down gangster rap when it came out. Like people who, you know, so-called gangster rap or whatever, they wanted to down it and say it was so negative and violent and misogynistic and this and that, you know. But what it was real. What it did was inform the rest of the country of what was going on out here. And that was, to me, very interesting because I had no idea what Crips and Bloods were. I had no idea that, you know, there was this subculture going on in California that we really didn't know about. So, I mean, to me, the gangs kind of, you know, the guys kind of informed you about it. The rappers, they let you know what was going on.
Your father was a cop in Newark. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering how you felt about the antagonism that was almost always expressed against cops in gangster rap.
Well, you know what? Cops here in California and cops in Newark, New Jersey are different cops. You know, you have bad cops everywhere. unfortunately. That's the reality of it all. But to me, you know, cops in New York and Jersey, it's like, it's a good job. You know what I mean? It's a city job or a state job. You got benefits. You get to carry a gun. You know, you're not really trying to get killed. You're not trying to go to war with the people. You're trying to, you know, solve crimes and prevent crimes. But it's really just a good city job to a lot of people. And that's the reality of it. Out here, it seems like they really take their policing seriously. I've never seen an out-of-shape police officer in California, and that's kind of scary. You know what I mean? It's like these guys really work on their bodies and stay in shape. Like, you know, they're real serious about it, you know? I don't know. It's just weird. There's a different kind of thing. And I know my family is, I got a lot of cops in my family, and I would hate for any harm to ever come to them just because somebody was anti-police. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just as wrong as being a cop who brutalizes people. You know, police brutality is just as wrong as people who batter cops.
Queen Latifah, she has a new autobiography called Ladies First. She'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Queen Latifah. She's a rap star, actress, and author of a new autobiography. Let's hear a scene from her 1998 film, Living Out Loud, which comes out on video tomorrow. In this comedy, Holly Hunter plays a woman who loses her identity and her income when her husband walks out. In this scene, the lonely, shy, and insecure Hunter goes by herself to a club to hear one of her favorite singers, played by Queen Latifah. Too shy to approach the singer, Hunter imagines having a conversation with her.
Scotchberry, you were great.
Well, thank you. Look a little sad tonight. You alone?
I don't know anybody on the Upper West Side.
Oh, where are you from?
Upper East Side. My husband left me. Our friends were his friends. I haven't really spoken to anyone. I mean, really spoken to anyone. I feel so invisible sometimes I forget I'm here.
I was married. My husband cheated on me left and right. It made me feel like I was crazy all the time. One day he tells me it's my fault he saw other women. So I picked up a knife and told him it was his fault I was stabbing him. I mean, I did a little jail time. It was worth it. Now I'm free, and he is scared of me.
You have been doing, a lot of acting. You were the star of the TV series, Living Single. You've been in several movies, including Juice and Get It Off. Is that what it's called?
Set It Off.
Set It Off, yeah. I saw it.
Get It Off. What you thinking about over there? Huh? Set It Off.
Set It Off. And, Living Out Loud.
Mm-hmm.
When you got into acting, had you planned to get into acting?
Well, it was something that I always wanted to do.
Since you were a kid?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I acted in school plays and stuff. I never had any, like, really formal training, as in classes or anything like that. But I felt like I had a talent, you know, and I felt like it would be something good for me to do. And I wanted to do it because I never looked at myself like I'm the best rapper ever on the planet. And unless I could say that, then I would never be comfortable just being a rapper. I needed to diversify and have things to fall back on. So acting was definitely a passion that I wanted to pursue.
Your first movie was Juice, right?
My first movie was it Juice? Jungle Fever.
Oh, Jungle Fever. Okay, that was like a small role, very small role, right?
Yeah, one day.
Okay, and then in Juice you had a larger role, mm-hmm, as a DJ. So it was kind of pretty close to who you are.
Right.
You didn't have to, like, reinvent yourself completely.
No, exactly.
For that. Was that a good way to get started, you know, in a role that was pretty close to home?
Well, you know what? It was, I guess, in a way, but then it wasn't. You know, it was kind of like I got sick of playing what people thought Queen Latifah was in their scripts. Like, people would look at my image or who they thought I was, and then they'd write me in there, basically. But it wasn't me, you know? It wasn't me. I was much more rounded. Well, I was much more well-rounded than the linear characters that they kind of had me playing. And they were just like this remanufactured version of Queen Latifah. I was happy for the opportunity to be in a movie and kind of learn. So it was kind of, it was good learning some of those things without having to stretch too far from who I really am. But that's not something that can sustain you, and that's not something that can establish you as an actor. So I was dying for the role that was not me, that was not anything remotely like me, so that I could really show my skills, my talent.
What's the closest you've come to that, to a role that's not remotely like you?
Set It Off, Cleo.
And describe your character.
Cleo and Set It Off. She was basically orphaned at a young age. She had no one left, really, but her friends. Her friends were the most important thing, you know, in her life to her. She would die for them. She was a very strong but real tender on the inside. She was a lesbian and in a monogamous relationship with someone, although she did like to flirt. And that was basically, she just really cared, you know, she kind of cursed a lot. She liked to drink and, you know, she liked to smoke her cigarettes. She was a little bit wild, but she was a very caring person. She really was really down for her friends, and that was like the bottom line.
Did you see a lot of homophobia surface after your performance?
No. You know, I didn't. People had love for that character. And that was what I really wanted to do. I wanted to make them really love her. You know, that character was so great and the script was so great for her because she got to really go all out for her friends. You had to love her. If you didn't care about her, then you would just, you needed to really examine your own emotions and your own feelings, because anybody who basically would say, look, you guys go, run, and take the heat, and knew she was going to take the heat, knew she was probably going to die, and knew she was going to meet her end, you know, but sacrificed herself so that her friends could try and, you know, could be freed like that. That's a true, true trooper. That's a true friend. And so I figured that there's, you know, if you don't have love for this girl by the time this movie is over, you're just twisted. So, I mean, basically, there's a scene in there where I kiss this girl. And I have yet to watch this scene because it's just, I can't watch it, you know, myself. I don't think I could just watch myself be intimate, period. It wasn't the fact that she was a girl, but it was the fact that just I'm kissing somebody on it. I can't watch me do that, I don't think. But it was kind of funny because I went and saw the movie like 8 times, you know, when it came out, and I would see it in regular theaters, like creep in and just sit in the back of the theater and watch the movie with a regular audience to see how they reacted. And every time that kissing scene came, people was like, ah, ew, ooh. You know, people, I mean, you could hear this big roar in the theater. But by the time that the end of the movie came, they were like cheering for the girls, like cheering for us to like get away to win, you know. So they couldn't remember, you know. It wasn't like their mind stayed focused on that one thing, you know, which was good for me.
So they're cheering or jeering, and you're turning your head from the screen at the same time because you don't want to watch yourself being intimate?
Pretty much. Pretty much, yeah.
If you're just joining us, my guest is rap star, actress Queen Latifah, and now she has a new memoir called Ladies First. Your mother wrote the introduction to the book, and she says, Your birth name is Dana, and your mother writes, I learned early on what Dana wasn't. When she was little, I would dress her in prissy outfits, complete with bows in her hair and matching bobby socks. By the end of the day, the bows would be either missing or knocked to the side, and the socks rolled down and dirty. There was no forcing my daughter to be dainty. She was who she was. I got a dynamo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember your mother trying to make you into a dainty girl?
Oh, yeah. She tried for a long time. And sometimes I would ask for her help. Like if I was going out with my friends, you know, to the movies or something, I would want to look cute, you know. So I asked my mom to help me get dressed or help do my hair. Otherwise, I was chilling, you know. I'd much rather be playing kickball, dodgeball, baseball, softball. You know, I even played football until, you know, the boys got too big. You know what I mean? They began to hit a little too hard, and I had to, like, excuse myself from that sport. But I was, like, athletic. I wanted to play and run and jump and climb. So, you know, dresses weren't really cutting it for me. I needed some slacks. I needed some pants and some, you know, some sneakers, and that was where they basically let me go.
Your mother taught high school for about 18 years. Is she still teaching?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to the high school where she taught?
Mm-hmm.
Was that rough?
For 3 years, my sophomore through senior year.
Was that odd having your mother be a teacher in your school?
Well, it was odd when you're trying to cut class, yeah. It's hard. You get busted too easily. Actually, I cut a lot, considering she was in the building. No, it was cool because my mother is like that teacher that everybody loves. Every student loves Miss Owens. You know, Miss Owens is so cool. You know, you get pregnant, you go talk to Miss Owens. What should I do? You know, you somebody pressuring you to have sex. What should I do? You know, any little problem, she has so many students come to her to talk to her, guys and girls, that really respected her opinion and just loved her and just felt like she was just so cool and down to earth and youthful, you know, that they could relate to her, but they could trust her as an adult at the same time to help them with whatever situation they were in. It was cool. You know, I got an extra coat of protection because she was my mom.
What was your mother's reaction when you told her you were dropping out of college and you were going to try to make it as a rapper?
You know what? My mother trusted me. I skipped anyway. So I had a year to buy in my mind. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, look, I jumped the grade, you know, early in life so I could have this year off. I wasn't quitting college. I was just taking a break. Because I figured, you know, my first record started playing, the album was being worked on, and I said, okay, look, let me take a year off from school and just really dedicate myself to this music career. If it doesn't work, then I go back to school. I'll be 18. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If it works, then I'm going to keep pursuing it and pushing it and trying to build it. And luckily for me, it took off. You know, my first album almost went gold. It sold like over 400,000 copies. Plus the single sold pretty decently, and I toured a lot, and, you know, I had a little lucrative career going on to be, you know, all of 18 years old. And, you know, my mother was, you know, helping me out financially, like, you know, to save my money and put it in the right places. And so it worked.
How old were you when you started calling yourself Latifah?
I was 8.
That's really young to decide you want to change your name. What made you want to do that at such a young age?
I didn't want to change my name. It was kind of a nickname, you know? Everybody did it. I was a follower. Don't you know? No, where I'm from in Newark, it's like a lot of people pick up Muslim names. They don't pick, you know, like Pee-wee necessarily and JoJo and Junie and Junior. And you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, I guess, I don't know, maybe there was like a big surge of Islam in Newark, in the city of Newark, basically, and that which is like the Mecca of the area of Jersey where I'm from. So I think that, like, after the riots in 67, probably when, you know, they had some riots in Newark in 67, and then they built all of this public housing they had to, like, you know, give to the, you know, black people in Newark. I think Islam may have been, like, bigger. It had gotten bigger, so we kind of inherited all of these names because a lot of people that, you know, lived around me, older people, had Muslim names. I don't even know if they were all Muslims, but they had Muslim names. I wasn't even Muslim. You know, I was a Christian. I wasn't nothing yet because I really didn't choose till I was about 11. But I just liked the name. I meant delicate and sensitive and kind, and that was me on the inside. Even though I was bigger than most of the girls my age, I was really a sweetie pie on the inside. And so that was really reflective of me. And my brother and I and my cousins all picked our name, so it just kind of worked like that.
In one of your records, you say, "Latifah's on vacation. I'm just plain old Dana today." Do you often feel that way?
Yeah. I do have to put Latifah on because, you know what, Latifah is me, but then she became bigger than me, you know, because Queen Latifah is known at all these places and, you know, everybody knows her face and what she does. And, you know, everybody doesn't know what Dana really does, you know, who Dana really is. So I have to give the you know, professional stuff a break and just be me sometimes, you know, and that's when I just jump in my car and drive and go visit my people and all that kind of stuff. You know, that was what that was about. I'm Queen Latifah, whatever. But today I'm just Dana. You know, let's just be Dana today.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Queen Latifah's new autobiography is called Ladies First. Her movie Living Out Loud comes out on video tomorrow. She's featured in The Bone Collector, starring Denzel Washington, which is scheduled for release next fall. This is Fresh Air.